Okay, let's start with lesson three. So far we have taken a gray level image, turned it into a binary image by thresholding. The next thing we have done is do connectivity analysis to separate different objects that may appear in the image. And in this lesson I will discuss properties that we can compute of each of the objects that can appear in the image that will allow us to make differentiate between them and thus help us recognize the objects. So it's a couple of groups of what we call shape descriptors, and some of them are position dependent and some are position independent. So position dependent, of course, are the bounding box, centroid, and orientation. And those basically allow you to localize the object in the image, of course. And the ones that are position independent, which the most important probably are image moments, but also perimeter, elongation, and the Euler number, allow you to identify the object. So with this combination of shape descriptors, we can localize and identify each of the objects in the image. So that's what we're going to try to do in this lesson. Just before describing each of these descriptors, one important thing to point out is that all of the descriptors that I will talk about are useful if this assumption holds, which is that objects are characterized by their silhouette. Okay, so the information regarding orientation, position, size, bounding box, and image moments is only useful if, in applications where each of the objects is completely separated from the others and completely visible in the image. Okay, so it's important to have this in mind when you have to decide whether you can use these type of techniques for the application that you're going to work on. So basically, no matter what the material of the object is, and it doesn't matter the weight, we are just going to compute properties of the objects that depend on the silhouette. So if you can identify an object just by looking at its silhouette, then these types of descriptors are useful for your application. Another important thing about these descriptors is that most of them, not all, but most, can be computed during connectivity analysis. So when you are separating the different blobs that you find in the image, you can compute at the same time most of these descriptors. So once you ended, finished with connectivity, you will have blobs separated with the corresponding descriptors computed. So it can be done in a very efficient way. Okay, so to start with the most simple ones, maybe the simplest one is the bounding box. The bounding box is simply the smallest rectangle that includes all of the pixels in that correspond to a specific object. And let me stress that we are going to compute this for each separate blob in the image. Okay, so once we know that a certain group of pixels corresponds to a specific blob, we can compute some simple descriptors such as the bounding box. The bounding box is very simple to compute during connectivity analysis. Of course, when you create the blob with just the first segment, then the bounding box is simply the box with initial row and final row, the row of the segment, and initial column and final column, the initial column and final column of the segment. When you add a segment to a blob during connectivity, then you can recompute the bounding box with the information of the row and columns of the new segment that you are incorporating. And finally, when you fuse two blobs, because you have decided that they really are the same blob, you can also recompute the bounding box to include all of the pixels of each of the blobs that you are fusing. So clearly, you can do this bounding box analysis during connectivity. On one hand, it's important to stress that the bounding box is a descriptor of limited use for several reasons. One is that it's very sensitive to noise. So in this example, it's very sensitive to a specific type of noise. So in this example, if there's an additional segment right here, then the bounding box will change. And this can happen because during thresholding, for example, these two pixels became or were considered objects. They then resulted to be part of this blob, and then the bounding box is going to change. But that is not always the case. So if you actually during connectivity you have decided that some other pixels like these are also part of the object, the bounding box is not going to change. In fact, the bounding box is going to be the same whether or not all of the white pixels that you see inside are object or background. So, of course, it's not very useful to describe the shape of the object, because any object, as I say, that has all of those pixels as object pixels will have the same bounding box. But of course, it's reasonably useful to describe the location of the object in the image. And with respect to translation, rotation, and scale, is the bounding box invariant to translation? If I translate the object in the image, is the bounding box going to change? Okay, so it's not invariant to translation. The size will not change if I translate the whole object, but the coordinates, of course, are going to change. And rotation, is it going to be, if I rotate the object, is the bounding box going to change in some way?
It depends the size of the shape. For example, vertical or horizontal, it depends the length of the line.
So it depends on the elongation, let's say. If an object is elongated, as you turn it around, the bounding box can change actually a lot. So it's not surprising, because the bounding box is useful for location. So we can't expect it not to change because the object changes location and orientation. That's actually what we want. And it obviously, of course, is also going to change if the scale of the object changes. Okay, but this is what we want for a descriptor that is position dependent. Okay, so this was one simple example, and now let's get into more complicated but useful descriptors for blobs. The most frequent information that you compute to describe a planar object are called image moments, and it has this formal definition. Let's say in terms of continuous functions, the moments of a function f are simply integrals of that have this this form. It's x to some p power times fx, the integral all along from minus infinite to infinite. This is the moment of order p. So the moment of order 0 is x to the 0 power times f. The moment of order 1 is x times f, x squared times f, etc. We are interested in specific types of functions, and one specially interesting one is our probability distributions. If f is a probability distribution, then, for example, the moment of order 1, m1, is the expected value of the probability distribution. It's the mean. Okay, what is the value of the zero moment of a probability distribution? No, this is the mean is the moment of order 1, m1, and m0, x to the 0 power times p, the integral all along the integral, the whole x-axis. Just don't, for this moment, don't concentrate on the images. concentrate on probability distributions. What's the integral of a probability distribution all along the x-axis? It's 1. It's a probability distribution. Okay? So the moment of order 0 of a probability distribution is 1. The moment of order 1 is the expected value of the distribution. And the moments of higher order also have very important or interesting meaning in terms of probability distributions. But the way that in which we use those moments are called central moments. So central moments are somewhat like the moments of a continuous function, but translated or with respect to the mean or to the moment of order 1. So a central moment of order p, it's the same integral, but the factor that you multiply is x minus the expected value to the p power times f. Okay? So it's the, if you want, it's moments centered around the mean. Okay? So for example, the variance is of a probability distribution is the moment, the central moment of order 2. Okay? Integral from minus infinite to infinite of x minus the mean squared times the probability distribution is the variance, and sigma is the standard deviation. Okay? What would be the moment of order 1? What the central moment of order 1? What would be, if you want, what is the expected value of a probability distribution which is centered around the mean? The expected value of the probability distribution is the mean. And if I translate the probability around that mean, it's going to be 0. The central moment of order 1 of a probability distribution is 0. So why? Because the expected value is the mean. If I subtract the mean, then the expected value is going to be 0. Okay? And the central moment of order 3. So 1 is the mean, 2nd the variance, and 3rd, this is much less known, I guess. It's called the skewness. Oh, this, I can't write very well with this. Skewness. It tells you whether the distribution is tilted to one side or tilted to the other side. If it, the distribution is symmetric, then the skewness is going to be 0. If it's tilted, I think it's to the left, it's going to be negative, and if it's tilted to the right, it's going to be positive. And by this I mean, if it's something like this, let's say longer, with a longer tail in that direction, it's going to be negative, and the other way around, it's going to be positive. Okay? And the central moment of order 4, it's called kurtosis. And kurtosis. And it tells you how shallow the distribution is. Okay, so as you can see, you can characterize many properties of a probability distribution using the moments. If you know the mean, if you compute moment of order 1, then you already have the mean. If you compute the moment of order 2, then you have the variance. With 3, you have skewness. With 4, you have kurtosis. And in an important way, moments of a certain probabilities of a certain function in general describe the function in useful ways. So why do we use this in computer vision? We use it because of this uniqueness theorem. The theorem says that, well, of course, these examples are in only one dimension. If we're working in two dimensions, then you can generalize the definition of moments so that you have the moment of order p, q is the double integral of x to the p power times y to the q power times f of x and y. Okay, which is actually the case that we're interested in. So I was saying that we're interested in moments because of this uniqueness theorem. This theorem says that the sequence of moments of a certain distribution in two variables univocally or completely determines the function. That means that two functions that are different in some way will have at least one of their moments different. And if two functions have all of the moments equal, that means that the two functions are equal. So, if we compute in some way moments related to functions that describe the blobs, then we can uniquely identify them. That's why we use image moments, okay? So, let's see how we turn this or convert this into digital binary images. In this case, instead of having integrals, we use sums. And the function that we're going to use to describe the object is simply the function of the pixels, the coordinates of the pixels, which belong to the object. So we use an approximation of the moments, which is simply the moment of order PQ is simply or approximated by the sum of the coordinates of all the pixels that belong to the blob, coordinates ij, rho I, column j, I to the p power and j to the q power. That is the moment, that's the moment p, comma q. So there is one moment of order 0, which would be I to the 0 power 1, j to the 0 power also 1. It simply sums 1 for all pixels that belong to the blob. That is, it's the number of pixels, okay? And if you have calibrated the camera and you know the size of the pixel, let's say for a certain application you know how much area of the object is inside one pixel. That is, calibration is something that we don't talk a lot about or almost nothing in this course. But it's important for these cases. If you know the size of the pixel in X and Y with respect to the area that it covers, then actually you have the area in of the pixels use of the blob using this moment of order 0. It's XY times SX times XY times the moment of order 0. The number of pixels multiplied by the area covered by each pixel. Okay, so this moment is proportional to the area of the blob. Then you have two moments of order 1. The order is computed summing, adding p plus q. Okay, so this would be moment 1, 0 and moment 0, 1. It would be simply the sum of all the rows of all the pixels in this case, and this would be the sum of all the columns of all the pixels of the blob in the second case. And which moments would you have of order 3? I'm sorry, of order 2.
What does it mean? Or?
Which moments? It would be the sum of what? I guess you can see by the transparency that there's 3 moments of order 2. So which would they be? So the moments of order 1 are the sum of I and the sum of j.
The sum of I al cuadrado.
I squared, yes. What else? J squared?
Double I per j?
I times j. So it's I squared, ij, and j squared. Okay? And moments of order 3, you over there? I cubed, I squared j, ij squared, and j cubed. Okay? So, you have an infinite, of course, number of moments that can be computed for each of the blobs. We, in practice, don't use an infinite number, of course, because that would take too long. So we just stick with moments up to order 2. And I will tell you some practical reasons for that. So what we're going to do here is assume that if you compute the moments of order 0, 1, and 2, you can uniquely characterize the object that results in those moments having those values. And before going on with this, I always like to make this clear. So we are using the coordinates of pixels of binary images. That means that, for example, if the object that I was considering was this one with only one segment, what I'm using to compute the moments is going to be the left top corner of the pixel. This would be the coordinate, okay? And I'm assuming in computing the area that all the area is centered about that coordinate, which is not the central coordinate, or more properly, it should be, I should use this coordinate, but I don't. I should use this as the center of mass of the pixel, but I'm using the top left corner. Why would that be? Why would I prefer to use the top left corner? Why is it easier?
Because it's an integer value.
Okay, so I can compute the moments more quickly because I'm using integer values. If I was going to use that central coordinate, then I would have to use floating point. Okay, and another important thing, could I, after computing the moments, correct them in some way so that they would actually correspond to the central coordinate of the pixel? So for example, for this one, what would be if I use this one instead of this one, what would be the difference in that moment in the rows? Or let's say it another way, could I correct very easily the computation of that moment after using the integer value? So it's not so difficult because this is the sum of rows, which is, I'm using always 0, but I should be using always 0.5. So I can add terms which depend on 0.5 in all the moments in a way that I can, let's say, compute them as if I was using the central pixel, the central coordinate instead of the corner. So the other thing is, first, I'm using integer values, which is faster. And the second thing is that I can easily correct them or compensate for that after I compute the moments, okay? So we'll stick to this convention. I will use that corner. I already described what, if you had the calibration, you could compute actually the area of the object. And this is one reason why we don't use moments up to a higher order than I think it's 2, but actually transparency says 3. Okay, as the order of the moment gets higher, the problems that I have in computing them increase, basically because I'm using coordinates of a very large image, and the moments of order higher than 3 would be, for example, a moment of order 20. It could be this coordinate to the 10th power times this coordinate to the 10th power again. So even if they're integers, the values are extremely large, and then I would have to start using floating point. And very soon, anyway, I would not have the floating point interval of possible values would not be enough to the moment because the values are very large. How can I limit this problem of having these large values in the next transparency? I will give you some hints. But for the moment, we will assume that we only compute lower order moments with integer values. And so the next important question is, are these moments invariant to translation? So if I translate the object from one to another part of the image, are the moments going to be the same? For example, is the moment of order 0 going to be the same? Yes, the area is going to be the same. So the moment of order 0 is invariant. And the moment of all this moment, if I translate the object like this, is it going to be the same or is it going to change? If I translate it along the same rows, have in mind that I is the row. So if I translate all the pixels along the same rows, the sum is still going to be the same rows, but the column is not going to be. Okay? So only in general, this moment of order 0 is invariant to translation, which is not exactly what I was expecting. They are not in general invariant to translation and to rotation. In general, not. It's I guess somewhat obvious because these moments depend on the coordinates of the pixels. If I in some way alter change the coordinates of the pixels, the moments in general will have to change. If I scale the object again, of course, then if I make it larger or smaller, the number of pixels and their corresponding coordinates is also going to be different. So necessarily the moments are going to change. Even the moment of order 0 is going to change if I scale, which is precisely what I want. So so these moments are not invariant to translation, rotation, or scale change. There's still some work that we have to do to make them invariant, which is what we want. So let's see. Okay, seeing how we can transform these moments so that they are invariant, these are some comments with respect to the values that I compute for the moments. One important observation is that if I use the coordinate system of the image as I've been doing all along in this course, which is in the top left corner, then the coordinates of the pixels are always positive. That means that all of the moments are going to be adding values. If I, instead of doing that, center the reference system in the middle of the image, then as you can see here, for example, these and these will have negative coordinates. So when I compute certain powers of the coordinates, the values are going to be negative and they will compensate in some way the positive values of these pixels. So we're not going to do this in the practicas because it's just slightly more complicated, but I wanted to tell you that it's always a good idea to do this so that the values of the moments are not so large. There's another effect, which is that the distance of the pixel that is furthest away from the origin decreases. This one is much more distant from the origin than any of the pixels here. Okay, so there will be smaller values, and they're going to be positive and negative. In some cases, so there's going to be some compensation. What else? Another important observation is that instead of computing the moments pixel-wise for every pixel, which is what I just defined, we can compute them segment-wise. So we can easily incorporate this computation into connectivity analysis. So if I is the row of a segment, J the initial column, and final is the final column, and longitude is the length, what would be the moment of order 0 of one segment? The moment 0, 0. That's for one pixel, but you have to compute it for the whole segment. So we said that the moment of order 0, 0 was the number of pixels in the blob. So in the case of one segment, how many pixels does the segment have? The length. So the moment of order 0, 0 is going to be the length. Okay? And the moment of order 1, 0, how would I compute that moment with the information that I have about one segment? 1, 0 would be the sum of the I-coordinate. So what is the I-coordinate for all the pixels in the segment? You have it written right there. It's I, which is the row of the segment. Okay, it's not going to change for any of the pixels of the same segment because they belong to the same line. So so what would be the moment of order 1, 0?
The length times the row.
It would be the length times the row. Okay? And the moment of order 2, 0, back there? No, your partner. So the moment of order 2, 0 is the sum of I squared. Do you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Length?
Yeah. I couldn't hear clearly. Only length squared? No. Do you know? Anybody knows? I'm sorry.
Length squared and plus.
Plus? No, plus nothing.
No.
And it's not the length squared. Because it's I squared. What is I?
The row.
Okay, so I squared.
The row squared.
The row squared. And you have to add all the I squares for all of the pixels of the segment, so that would be? What times I what times row squared? So how many pixels are there?
Length
times row squared. This is just to point out that I can, during connectivity analysis, compute, and these are just some examples, but I can compute the moment of the segment that I'm including in the connectivity analysis. And then, since the total moments are sums of these moments, then as I add a segment to a blob, I can add all of its moments to the moments of the blob. And if I fuse two blobs, then I can also add all the moments of the blobs for the total moment of the resulting blob. So I can do this during connectivity analysis. That's what I want to point out. This is something that used to be important in computer vision, but it's slightly less so now, maybe. It always was a good idea to pre-compute the squared powers and the cube powers of the coordinates of pixels in the image, because I was going to do this operation a lot. Okay, so we wanted to save basically computation time. So for that, we pre-computed x squared for all of the possible coordinates that we needed, and also x cubed. So instead of squaring and computing the cubic power, what we did was pre-compute them and then just access the vectors that had the x squared or the x cubed in order to obtain these values. This is slightly less important these days, maybe. But if you are working in a very large image, then maybe it's still a good idea to do something like that. So before doing connectivity, well, before executing your vision program, you could pre-compute powers like this and then just recompute the compute the moment of each of the blobs using those values. Okay. So, I've just said that the moments are going to describe uniquely the blob, but they are not invariant to translation or rotation or scale size. So we have to modify the definition in some way so that it becomes like that. And this information is going to be useful for that, but it's also useful for computing the location of a certain blob. It's a centroid. I can compute the centroid simply by computing the mean row of all the pixels in the blob, and also the mean column of all the pixels in the blob. So this would be just averages of I and J. Bar I and bar J, and so bar I would be the average row. It would be the sum of I divided by the sum of 1, which would be which moments? Okay, so I can compute the moments, and after that I can compute the centroid with the moments. Okay, this would be moment 1, 0 divided by moment 0, 0, and the other one would, I guess, obviously be moment 0, 1 divided by moment 0, 0. This gives me the centroid of the blob, or if you want, the center of mass of the blob, assuming that the object is of a uniform material. Of course, the centroid is assuming that all of the pixels weigh the same, if you want. Okay? So it's not, it's the center of mass, not in, not always if the object has a different density, but assuming that the object is of a uniform density, then this would be exactly the center of mass. With respect to the centroid, two simple but important observations are, it's not always inside the object, of course. If I have an object like this, for example, the centroid might be around here. So it's not necessarily part of the object. That's one thing. And the other important thing from a practical point of view is it's a floating point number. So I'm computing all the moments as integer values because that's very fast. But the centroid is going to be a floating point number because it's this division. Okay? This is very important for the lab work. I tell you that it's the source of many problems that people have to have this third lab work executing correctly. So try to remember to compute the centroid as a floating point number. What else? Well, this is something that I haven't talked about much in the last lesson, but actually, so when we talked about gray level images and binary images, I told you that one way of characterizing an image was its histogram. Okay, we said that it was that we could see some information in the histogram, which allowed us to say that the image had high contrast or low contrast or things like that. There's similar things that we can compute, not exactly, but similar things that we can compute in binary images, which are called the projections. And if we only have the projections of a certain blob, then we can still compute something like the centroid. So the projections are horizontal and vertical, and just they are simply vectors that say how many pixels has the blob in row 1, row 2, row 3, row 4, etc. Or column 1, column 2, column 3, column 4. If I only have the information related to the projection of the projections of a blob and not the blob itself, I can still compute the centroid using this simple formula. Okay, so just in case you only have that information, the centroid is going to be possible to be computed. What would happen if in this blob I change a pixel in a certain row? Is the horizontal projection going to change? If I move the pixel, just one pixel, move it in a row. Yes? Does that mean that the centroid is not going to change then? Because that wouldn't make sense. If I think that you can understand that if I move a pixel of a blob in from to a different coordinate, the centroid should change. Okay? So why doesn't the horizontal why doesn't the projection change? I'm sorry? Yeah? Exactly. So when I move one pixel, depending on whether I move it horizontally or vertically, one of the projections will not change, but the other will. So the centroid is going to change. So by moving around any of the pixels, the centroid is going to definitely change. And another important thing, again to clarify this digitization issue, is for example, in the simple case that my blob is simply this segment, what would be the moment of order 0, 0? What would be the sum of 1s? Five, okay. This would be 5. Oops. And the sum of I?
For factorial.
I is the row of the segment. So which row is the segment in?
Zero.
So what would be the sum of I? It would be 0. Okay. And the sum of J? More difficult one. So J is the sum of the columns of all the pixels in the blob. It would be 0 plus 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4. 10. Okay, so what would be then the centroid of this blob? Over there? Yeah. We said that bar I was what? We said that bar I, or I bar, is what? The mean row?
It was the moment of 1, 0.
Yeah. So in this case, how much is that?
So it's 5 divided.
No, the other way.
Zero.
Yes?
By
5? 5. So it's 0? Okay. And the mean column? Yep. Yeah. Okay, how much is that? Okay. So this means that if I compute the moments in this way, the solution is that the centroid is in coordinate 0, 2. Okay? Which is right here. Okay? And if I look at the image in considering the area of the pixels, then what I would like it to be is to be right here. Or what you would think it's intuitively correct is to have it right here. Okay? Because of digitization or digitalization, it's always going to be the centroid, it's always going to be moved half a pixel to the right top corner. Okay, and as I was trying to say before, you can easily correct it afterwards just by adding these values. So you can compute it as an integer value, and then if you really want to specify what the centroid actually is, then you can correct it very easily. And so you could just graphically say, see in the second example, that the centroid is going to be computed right here. Because, as I said before, you are considering that the top corner has the full center of mass of the pixels. If you want to correct that then afterwards, then you would correct it up to here, which is graphically what you would like it to be. Okay? So digitization has this effect that can be easily corrected. Okay. Maybe, is there any question at this point?
Yeah.
Yep.
With this correction, when you can't represent it on the screen, I mean, you can't put half a pixel on the screen.
You would just draw the closest pixel. So you always have that problem when you draw digital images. But you can compute more precise moments in general if you use this value.
Okay, so you mean the correction should be done on the calculations?
Yes, not for drawing the pixel, just for calculations. Okay? Let's make a break then. 10 minutes. Un segundo.
La práctica 2 era para el jueves pasado.
La práctica 2 fue la semana pasada, sí.
Es que te pregunté hace 2 semanas y me dijiste 2 semanas. Porque no había fecha, te dije que no había fecha en el guión. Y el correo, claro, lo miré este domingo con fecha del mismo 6. Entonces...